LBC, I'm Clive Bull with you till 7, and we're going to talk technology now. I'm joined by Fevzi Turkalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com. We're going to talk about the latest gadgets, particularly Fevzi has selected his favourites from the year. If you have a question about how things work, about if you've got a problem, you can't get something working, maybe it's a Christmas gift that you've been given and you are struggling with it. And I know a lot of people are getting tech for Christmas this year. If you've got a question, or it might be some buying advice. That's the other thing. If you're wondering what to buy, what do you need in terms of technology, then give us a call. We obviously tend to get a lot of calls about things like phones and tablets and computers, and now smart speakers seems to be the big thing as well. But actually, there's a whole range of technology out there, so we can look quite broadly at all of it. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. If you've got a point or a question on technology and Fevzi, thank you for coming in. Good to see you.
Pleasure. Good to see you too.
Let's look at some of these gadgets that you're recommending. You brought some of them in with you.
I know. Yeah. So this one I took out the boot of my car because I actually use this one.
Tell us what it is.
Right. It's called a Rove Jump Starter Pro. So Rove, R-O-A-V is the brand. And it's for people who've got a car who have ever thought they might need to jump start it. So traditionally, when you have to jump start a car, you have to find another car and then a set of cables and then park the two cars.
It's a fiddly process.
Yeah. And also what tends to happen often is that you need to jump start a car more than once to get home. So you'll stop somewhere in traffic and then it'll switch off and then you're really stuck again.
Yeah.
And I've had a sort of AARAC type gentleman have to follow me home so that I make sure I got there. So what this is it's a battery powered jump starter. So in essence, think of those handheld chargers that you use for your mobile phone and tablet, but think of it on steroids. So it's a big chunky brute of a thing.
What is it, about 6 inches three inches, something like that?
Yeah, by about an inch and a half. So it's quite kind of thick. And it does actually charge up your phone and tablet. So if you break down, you can do that. But it's got the clamps that you would normally attach to a car battery. You plug this bit into the special slot here.
Mm-hmm.
And this has got enough juice. So you charge this up, keep it in your glove compartment or your boot. It will stay charged for months and months and months. So this one...
What a clever idea.
Yeah, and it will do up to 15 jump starts depending on your car.
No, really?
Yeah, and once you get home, you should charge it up. Don't think, I'll just keep it like that. But as I said, because sometimes we break down and then we keep breaking down because the engine keeps switching off. So this enables you to do that. In fact, you could even leave it attached. So it does a couple of things. First of all, even if you're just taking a journey, you can just clip this to your battery and check that your battery is showing a good voltage. It's got a little display on the box that attaches to the metal clips that plugs into the main thing. So it will tell you if your battery's weak. It will jump start you if you need to. It's actually got a little compass built into it. So it's kind of cute. So imagine a sort of breakdown situation. And again, because in a breakdown situation, you know, you might have to be on the phone a lot. You might be having to guide someone to you. This will keep two devices via the USB chargers fully charged up. So say two mobile phones or a mobile and a tablet so that the kids don't freak out whilst you're broken down. It has that. It even has emergency lights on it as well. So you can have like flashing LEDs and that sort of thing. So you can put that on the vehicle and have it flashing. So you can see, and that's just...
It looks like the kind of thing that would be on Dragon's Den as somebody who's had a brainwave.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, as you say, a portable charger for your mobile phone, but it's a big, chunky one that you can actually restart your car with.
And the reason why that's important is because there are other devices like this, but they're not all created equal, because the amount of juice required to start a car differs depending on the size of the engine. So this one will do petrol engines up to 6 litres and diesel engines up to 3 litres. So that covers most domestic vehicles on the road. So it does that really well. It used to be £100. I noticed just before I came, I checked it. It's down to a shade under 70 now.
And it's a lot less bulky. That I've had car battery chargers before, and they're the size of a shoebox.
Yeah. So this doesn't charge the battery, it just gets you going.
Gets you going,
and then you rely upon your alternator to charge.
That's all
or
you
just,
need,
yeah,
really.
Till you get home or to a garage or something like that. But the benefit is that with a car charger, of course, you have to wait for it to charge up. This will just jumpstart it. But I've had it where, you know, my car got jump-started. I went to the petrol station because, sod's law, I was nearly out of petrol, and then it wouldn't start again.
Well, so. that's a really clever little gadget. I like that idea.
Yeah, that's from Rove, and it's spelled oddly. It's R-O-A-V, but it's pronounced Rove.
Okay. If you've got a question or a point about technology, then call us now, 0345 6060 973. If it's a quick question, then by all means, put it on text, 84850, or tweet at LBC if you're on Twitter, at LBC. And we'll take some calls in a moment. Let's mention one more gadget and home security.
Yeah, so home security and elsewhere. So this is called the Arlo Go Mobile HD Smart Security Camera, and you can use it in your home. And it looks like all the other ones, you know, it looks like, you know, Nest and all the other ones similar. It's a sort of a white sort of dome-shaped
white
thing.
Plastic.
Yeah, it's a bit bigger than a tennis ball.
You can just about get it in your hand, about the size of an orange.
But it's different. Now, we hear lots of these cameras being described as wireless because they use Wi-Fi, but often you still have to power them. Yeah, and if you haven't got Wi-Fi, what are you meant to do? If you want to, you know, put it in the garden and shoot wildlife or see who's messing about in your shed or anything like that. So this one is kind of special because, first of all, it's battery powered. So the back of it opens. You just take the battery and you pop it in.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, you can charge it up and it will stay charged and useful for a number of months. So
it gets around that problem of having to wire up a cable.
So you don't have to drill through your external walls to do it, and it will stay good for months. But that's not the end of it. Let's say you haven't got Wi-Fi. Inside here, there are two slots. One is for a SIM card. So you put a 4G or a 3G SIM card in there, and it uses the data from that. So you get a special SIM card for it and do that. And the other one is a memory card. So it will actually store pictures and video onto the card itself, so you don't have to, if you don't want to, pay for a subscription, because the subscription
that seems like a very good idea. So how would people use this?
Well, you could put it literally anywhere. So I'll give you one use. One unusual case study. There was a person who had a family member's grave, and every time they came back, the perimeter of the grave had been struck by a vehicle, and they couldn't work out who was doing it, and there were no witnesses. They popped one of these in a tree, and by the way, you can buy camouflages for these as well. So you can put, you know, get green or grey type camouflage. They popped it in a tree, and they realised that it was the rubbish vehicle coming by, and it's the nuts on its wheels were just grinding the things. So you can do that. You can do it. Let's say you've got an unused building, maybe no power supply, no Wi-Fi in it. You can just stick it up there. You can put it in the garden. Some people use these for filming wildlife or just to see what the hell goes on in their gardens. And it literally is portable because you get this. So you can attach, you can just screw it permanently, but you can do a magnetic
link.
That's
like a sort of holder like you have for your phone in your car, something like that.
Exactly. So you can do that, and you can angle it and so forth. But there's other ways of attaching this as well. But the point is, doesn't need Wi-Fi, doesn't need a power supply. It will work anywhere. And
genius.
Don't have to have a subscription to it either. Now, these things are not cheap. This one's it's dropped in price, but it's still around £269, I think I saw this at. But it's called the Arlo Go. There are others in the Arlo range, but this one's the Go because it's completely independent, and this is, it's just nice. You can just, if you're getting, for example, fly tipping, let's say someone's fly tipping down the bottom of your road, even on your premises, you can just put one of these secretly somewhere and just see who's doing it.
And you don't need any wires at all. You don't even need Wi-Fi.
No.
Clever.
All you need is to be within range of a cellular signal for that to work.
Okay. Fevzi Turkalps here. We're talking about technology. If you've got a question or a point about any kind of gadget or technology question, call us now, 0345 6060 973. Let's go to Mike in Heathrow. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have a question which can be divided into two parts, I guess.
Sure.
I spent a lot of time on the London Underground, and without a signal, sometimes it's not easy to stay in touch, especially if I'm running late to meetings. Mm-hmm. I believe London Underground is going to be trialing Wi-Fi in the... I'm not sure if it's just the stations or whether it's actually within the network itself. And the second part of the question is, will things change with 5G?
Okay, good questions. Okay, so first of all, there is already Wi-Fi available in many stations on the London Underground. Not every station, but quite a few of them, particularly the central stations. They tend to be linked to particular networks, so it depends what network you're on as to whether you can use those. One word of warning I would give you, that is, whenever you attach to a public Wi-Fi, be it on a tube station or in a cafe, you are joining an insecure network. And what that means is that your phone can be at risk. You know, so as a minimum, people can track your location. If they use the right software, which is unfortunately freely available, they could even access the contents of your phone. So just be very cautious about using public Wi-Fi. There are ways around it. You know, if you use a virtual private network, you can, to an extent, protect yourselves, and that's something that, you know, you should consider doing before using any sort of public Wi-Fi. Second part of your question regarding 5G. So, yes, 5G will be ubiquitous. There has been talk about making cellular signal or Wi-Fi signal available in the tunnels as well. And that's kind of an interesting social question as well, because it will change what people do. And, you know, we might have to have the reintroduction of quiet carriages and so forth.
That might be quite annoying.
I mean, it's arguably annoying enough as it is, you know, but, you know, just seeing what style of zombie you have doing what with their phone. But when people start having loud conversations as well, because at the moment they're wearing headphones, hopefully, and so forth. But if they're having a telephone conversation or a video conversation, then obviously they're going to be yattering away. But yes, we can expect that to come. One of the things about 5G is not just that it's faster, although it is faster, it's the number of concurrent connections that can be made, the number of people that can connect to it, and the number of devices. So things like driverless cars, for example, will rely on 5G. So you will find that, you know, you will have effectively city-wide internet, and internet radio will really take off in cars and that sort of thing as well. So, you know, we can look forward to it and dread it in equal measure, I suspect.
Okay, great. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Mike. Bye now. Thanks a lot. If you've got a point or a question on technology, then call us now.
This is LBC with Clive Bull.
LBC, I'm Clive Bull with you till 7. We're talking about technology at the moment, and Fevzi Turkalp is with me, editor of the tech advice site GadgetDetective.com. If you've got a question about technology, you want some advice, buying advice, getting something, working advice, or just a question about the future, then do call us 0345 6060 973. What often happens, though, is people, because they're interested in technology, use their tech and they tweet the questions instead.
Indeed.
So let's put a couple of these tweeted questions to you. Andrew says, question for you on gadgets. Is it still worth buying the iPhone 11 series, or should I wait now for the iPhone 12 as my 6S is still good apart from a bad battery?
Yeah.
It's always a difficult one, isn't it?
When
do you upgrade?
We're 9 months away. So it's an annual release of iPhones, and we're probably about 9 months away from the new one. So it's only the existing ones are about 12 weeks old. I actually think it is worth waiting, because I'm an iPhone user, amongst others, but I myself deliberately didn't go for the 11 because I felt that there were a number of things that were missing from it that are likely to appear in the next generation. Now, this is just my analysis, Apple don't pre-announce. Now, one of the things with the current generation of iPhones is they don't have Touch ID. You can no longer use a fingerprint sensor. You have to use Face ID, which is less convenient and under some circumstances. So the reason why it went away was because they got rid of the home button, because the screen went towards the edges of the device.
Yes.
And there was no room. Apple, it's been rumoured for a long time, but Apple actually, about a week ago, it was discovered they'd registered a patent for putting a fingerprint sensor under glass. So now we will see, and other manufacturers have done this. I mean, Apple is kind of on the hardware front in this sort of catching up with Samsung and others at the moment. But so we will probably see fingerprint sensors and therefore Touch ID coming back. And there'll be a number of other changes. I just felt that the 11 series, unless you're desperate, was probably the one to miss. So under normal circumstances, I would say, look, you're 9 months away, buy one now, enjoy it in good health. Yeah. But actually, if you're not desperate for one and you want one that's going to be longer lasting, let's say, with better features, then I would say the 12 series will be more than just an incremental.
I think it's a really good point you make about the Face ID. I've got an old iPhone, and I like the fingerprint thing. Yeah, I think it's very convenient, and the Face ID is a bit fiddly.
Yeah, and in fact, in London, I use mine to tap in and out on public transport, for example. And up until very recently, you had to, you know, put your fingerprint on it and wait. And you know, there's like, I don't know if you've ever tried it with an iPhone, but it takes 3 or 4 seconds to register. And that doesn't sound like much unless you're in the rush hour and there's a queue of people behind you and you get a few iPhone users and everything backs up behind them. They've just done an express transit system where if you choose, you can opt into a system where you just tap the phone onto the touch out panel and you don't have to use a fingerprint, and it's much, much quicker. The downside is if someone picks up your iPhone and you've lost it, they can use it to travel around London Underground. I would argue if you've lost your iPhone, that's arguably the least of your worries.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Somebody's just tweeted here on this subject, very much waiting for micro LED displays on the next iPhones. I don't know what that is, do you?
Yeah, so there's micro LED, or some people think OLED, organic LED. So at the moment, the technology on the screens of iPhones is somewhat conventional LCD panels. They're very nice LCD panels, but if you look at some of the Samsungs, for example, and some of the LGs, they use these much more vibrant displays that use either OLED or micro LED technology. So it's a different way. It means the blacks are blacker. It's like TVs. If you've got an OLED TV, you get what they call wider dynamic range, whiter whites, blacker blacks. Sounds like a commercial for soap powder. But so the displays can be noticeably more vibrant. Apple are always a bit cautious about that because there are power implications to that, so they won't introduce it until they can still maintain all-day battery life. But there's every chance it will come in with the 12s as well, so another reason to wait and see if you can.
Lots of people, no doubt, will be watching their big tellies at Christmas. I keep seeing this OLED thing on. Is that something that everybody should get now, or is that sort of super-duper?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm a bit old school about this, Clive. I believe the most important thing about television is what you watch on it. You know, if it's a good program, that's far more important than the precise clarity of the picture. So the things to watch for now, if I was buying a new TV now, if I had the budget, I'd probably buy one that was 4K capable. That means it's got four times as many dots on it as a full HD television. And that's because although broadcasters may be slow to produce 4K content, the sort of the newer broadcasters, people like Netflix and Amazon and so forth and YouTube, are very much adopting that standard. In fact, you can even buy 8K TVs, although I think that's a bit, you know, beyond the pale at the moment. It'd be some time before you get a lot of 8K programming. So I would be more concerned with whether it's HD or 4K and go for the 4K. As I said, the OLED and the similar technologies, they have a wider dynamic range. They pop, the picture pops more, if I can put it in that way. But that's not necessarily the best thing. And also some OLED technology still suffers from burn-in in the screen. So if you have the same graphic on your TV a lot, you know, if you watch the one station, it's always got its logo in the same place, you can find that it etches itself onto the screen after a while.
Yes, we've got lots of questions coming in. Let's go to Brendan in Nottingham. Hello, Brendan.
Hello there, Clive. Just a couple of questions. First of all, I noticed, you know, under the old CRT TVs, they used to play DVDs nice, and they used to play videos nice. Mm-hmm. Now, the new modern TVs, well, not modern, they've been here for ages now, but the current TVs, they play DVDs better, but if you ever got a video on, it looks and sounds horrible. Mm. Why?
Yeah, so what you've got is an old, very old generation. You're talking about VHS videotapes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, but can I ask, why is it CRT, which is presumably inferior to modern TVs, mm-hmm. give a nice stab at video and a nice stab at DVD, but a modern TV, while it will enhance DVD, it makes video...
Look terrible. That is true, yeah.
So with the old-style media like videotape, it was designed to work with CRT, and CRTs update their screen in a different way. So they scan, so you get an electron. It's a very technical, but you get an electron beam scanning from left to right and then down a page, and it goes across left to right. So it builds up the picture. Whereas on a modern LCD type screen, all the pixels light up at the same time for that frame. So that causes a problem. The other problem is also to do with the resolution itself. So the VHS will have a conventional standard definition resolution. Yeah. So it'll have to be scaled up to so it doesn't only fill a corner of the screen. They blow up. And that process itself can sometimes, depending on how it's done by the television, it can give rise to this sort of poor quality. So it kind of displays it, but it was never intended to, if you know what I mean.
I see, thank you. Just a quick other question, if I can, please. Can I ask why it is that the more later ones, 4K, 8K, or whatever, and this is just a personal opinion, sometimes, depending on what they're showing, it looks almost cartoon rather than natural.
I know what you mean. I saw this.
It looks so rich and really high. Mm. It doesn't look real, like you'd look out your window and see it real.
I know exactly what you mean. I saw something on a really flash television, and it looked almost, maybe it's what my eyes are used to, but it looked like a computer game, even though it was real people.
Yeah. It can happen. Again, this can be to do with the conversion process, which is happening on the fly between, so you've got a 4K or an 8K, if you're lucky enough, an 8K screen that, you know, it would ideally like to see an image being sent to it of that resolution, and it's having to convert it on the fly. But also there are settings within these television sets that allow you to so some of the settings try and give you a more fluid motion, but in doing that they can cause smearing. So let's say you're watching a football match, you'll see a sort of comet trail on the ball, and then you can change that, and so you'll have something that doesn't smear but then gives you a less fluid picture. So sometimes it's a matter of changing the settings, and particularly Brendan, in stores, when you go into a store, there are special store settings on these television sets, and they're designed to look really attractive in the store under bright lights and so forth. And sometimes those settings give rise to them not looking at their best. So when you get them home, you have to reset them, and if you can, and you know how, recalibrate them. But it's essentially because the high definition screens are having to adjust to the relatively low definition picture coming in.
Good observations, Brendan. Thank you very much for that. If you've got a point or a question on technology, then call us now, 0345 6060 973. Quick question here from Keith in Leamington Spa. He says, do new laptops still include DVD disk drives as standard?
Increasingly rare, actually. And if you get one with a DVD drive inside it, it's probably an old design, if not old stock.
Right. And should you have one? Do we need them anymore?
No. Well, look, my feeling is this. If you've got a laptop, it's presumably because you're transporting it in some fashion from site to site. Otherwise, a desktop is the better choice anyway. So the weight of the device, the bulk of the device increases, and also it drains the battery. Even when you haven't got a DVD in there, in fact, it has to spin it up and so forth, it drains the battery. No, not really, because memory is relatively cheap now. It is quite easy to make copies of DVDs onto the internal memory or memory stick, or the data, you know. So programs now, you know, when you buy programs, they often no longer come on disk anymore. They're often downloaded and you enter your license key. So really, I'd say if I was looking for a new laptop now, unless I had a really niche application like, I wanted my kids to be able to watch it in the back of the car and shove DVDs in it. But then again, a laptop isn't the best choice of thing for that either. So you'd have to have a really niche application for a laptop to be recommended to have a DVD drive in it these days.
Okay, lots more questions coming in. We'll take more calls in a moment. 0345 6060 973 50. Turkup is with me. We're talking technology.
This is LBC, leading Britain's conversation with Clive Bull.
LBC, I'm Clive Bull. This Christmas Day, and we're talking technology at the moment, offering you a bit of help if you have a Christmas gadget you want to ask about, or you wondering about what to buy, you want some advice. Fevzi Turkalp is here from the tech advice site gadgetdetective.com. We're going to go to Yusri in Ealing. Hello.
Clive, good
evening. Hello, evening. What would you like to say?
Merry Christmas and to you.
Team.
Well, listen, first-time caller, and I'm not sure if my question is related to your topic of tonight or not, but it really, I felt like I better share it with you. Maybe you will have a solution for me, because I want to ask about the alternative to fiber, because fiber, or what do you call it, super speed, because unfortunately, I live in London, West London, and believe it or not, we don't have fiber in our area. And we're really struggling to get the device working in my home. And it's not only me, the whole area. But I don't know. I've been searching for the alternative, and I don't know where to go. So maybe you can kindly help me tonight.
Okay. So, Yusri, there are still dead areas of London and certainly many other parts of the UK where you can't get fibre broadband. So, but why fibre broadband? We don't just mean broadband where, you know, you get faster than dial-up speeds, but you know, significantly faster than that, and it uses optical cables instead of purely copper, although sometimes the last section to your door can still be copper. And it is tricky. So you haven't got a lot of choices given where, you know, based on your location. You either look at what Openreach have done. So Openreach is the arm of BT that may get broken off at some point, and they're the people who deal with the rollout of the fibre network. So you can trace on the BT Openreach where you're up to, and they can sometimes give you a prediction of when your area is likely to have fibre. The other form of fibre, which is independent from that, the most common one, is from Virgin Media. So if you're in a Virgin Media area, then all of their stuff is fibre, and that's another option. There are some other small bit players, but you know, they only cover very small areas and you're unlikely to be in theirs. Some people use 4G SIM cards if they're in areas where they need faster speed. And 5G, of course, when that rolls around, will be a solution as well.
Could that be a solution when it eventually comes for Yusri?
Absolutely, it could. But the thing is,
could people use it instead of having their own broadband then?
Yeah, in fact, in a lot of countries where they don't have the infrastructure that this country has had, with copper wire being laid all around the place, some countries have jumped straight to wireless internet in their homes anyway. It's partly to do with the technology and, you know, can you get a good signal and so forth. But the other part of it is, what sort of contract are you on? If you're on a metered connection, then that can be very expensive, you know, because obviously large TV devices and so forth can consume a lot of data. But there are now unmetered 4G SIM cards available. Three do them, for example, and others do them as well. And that wasn't true until fairly recently. When we have 5G, although it will be faster, you can imagine that the cost will be higher for 5G initially, because they'll want to get their investment back.
Okay, have you been...
I tried to search for the 4G, and the only provider which I came to find, they are happy to provide me with 4G, it's my mobile provider, if I can say the name, which, if it's possible to say the name or not,
yes.
I'm not sure.
Yes, fine.
Yeah, they're Vodafone, but what is it? It's only for the broadband, but they don't give you the broadband and the line, landline as well. So mm-hmm. What you will end up have to have, you have to have the landline separate, the broadband separate,
yeah.
And also
expensive.
The 4G is quite expensive. Mm. So that's what I get from them.
Have you been given any clue as to when you might eventually get fibre optic in your area?
Well, it looks like it's quite long way, because even we tried to get Openreach to to you know, to tell us when.
Well,
there is nobody.
You never know. Boris Johnson made it an election pledge, so he's going to be having super broadband everywhere.
Yeah. Israel, look, check out the availability of Virgin if you haven't already done so. On the BT Openreach site, if you and all your neighbours register interest, that puts you theoretically at least up the level. And also, I know it's a bit old school, but speak to your MP about it, because it's quite a political hot potato, because Openreach are under a lot of pressure. The accusation levelled against them with some justification is that they've been slow. They've picked the low-hanging fruit in terms of where they've laid their fibre cables, but they haven't done it everywhere, and you still have, you know, major spots in major cities that don't have it, much less rural areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Good idea. Good luck, Yusri. Thank you. Let's go to Chris in Bristol. Hello, Chris.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hello. What it is, I'm thinking of upgrading to a 4K television, probably like an OLED. Mm-hmm. And my main concern is, as you know, with native resolution, like the 1080p TV that I've got, yep, anything that's not in that resolution is going to look a bit soft because it's not within its native resolution.
Mm-hmm.
When I get a 4K TV, mm-hmm, will my Blu-rays in 1080p still look soft, or would it fall within the same aspect ratio or of a 4K and look sharp still?
Okay, so there's a lot to this, Chris, and the short answer is it depends on what you buy. And if you can actually go into a store and try your discs with it, even take your machine in, if they're a decent store, they'll let you try it. Do that, because really it depends on so many things. It depends on your DVD player. It depends on the exact discs that you're playing. It depends on your eye and what you find acceptable.
Wow.
There are, yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, by all means, or the other way is, you know, buy it from, you know, an online retailer named after a South American river, and then you've got 30 days to return it, something like that. But don't buy it if you don't have the ability to return.
I mean, there are some very good retailers on the high street, aren't there, that will let you go in and do that sort of thing.
And the problem is, to be quite frank about it, Clive, the problem is that people do that. They go and test it, and then they go and buy it online afterwards.
Yes.
And that's why you've got
lots of
closing department stores and all the rest of it. Because, you know, you can find people in store, you know, scanning barcodes in there and looking it up in the store. And it's,
yes.
And I do it as well, so I can't complain about it. But then we shouldn't be surprised when shops close down.
No.
Okay, so basically just go down then, take a Blu-ray disc with me.
Yeah. I mean,
a decent Blu-ray player, tip 4K, and have a look at myself and probably compare it.
I would say so, Chris. Or the other thing is, get a retailer, online retailer, who will ship it to you, has a really good returns policy, and be aware that consumer rights are not as good as they used to be. Under the old distance selling regulations, you could return anything within 14 days for any reason, having tried it, even if it didn't match your curtains. You know, you could just send it back for any reason. Now the law says the minimum rights that you have is that the item returned has to be in saleable condition. And the definition of saleable condition is disputed. Some retailers will say if you've broken the seal on the box, it's no longer saleable as new, and therefore they'll either not take it back or charge you a restocking fee. So just go and buy from someone if you want to. You know, if you want to try it at home, which is ideal, because then you can try it over, you know, up to 30-day period, get someone who's got a really good returns policy, which gives you more rights than the legal minimum.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much for that. Chris in Portsmouth says, what's more user-friendly for an elderly person, an Android phone or an Apple phone? Any specifics would be very helpful.
Okay, I would say, and I use both, and I'm getting on a bit now. I would say that the Apple phone probably still has the edge in terms of usability. Apple's, you know, Google have caught up a lot, so the differences are somewhat marginal. And I would also say that the accessibility options on the Apple phone is better. So by that, I mean, if a person, I'm not saying all old people will need this, but, you know, all of us, as we get older, our eyesight may not be as good, our hearing may not be as good. The accessibility options, the ability to operate the phone.
You can make the print big for a start, can't you?
Easily. I mean, on an iPhone, if you swipe down from the top with two fingers, it'll speak everything that's on the screen for you.
Really? I didn't
even
know that.
It's as simple as that. Yeah, once you've enabled it, you just do that. And the voices on these things are so much better. And the speech recognition is really good on the iPhones. Often you don't need an internet connection for the voice recognition to work, whereas on some Android phones you still do.
So Apple would just have the edge at the moment for an elderly person.
I would say so, and also the support from Apple, although it's arguably not as good as it was, is still better than the average support in the high street for non-Apple brands.
Okay, lots more questions coming in a moment. This is LBC 545.
This is LBC with Clive Bull. Call 0345 6060 973. Tweet at LBC. Text 84850.
LBC, I'm Clive Bull. We're talking about technology at the moment. Fevzi Turkalp is here from the tech advice site GadgetDetective.com. Somebody's just texted here saying, I've just swiped down my screen on my iPhone with two fingers. Nothing happened.
Yeah, you have to put it in the accessibility settings. You must switch it on. Yeah.
Okay.
But once you've done that, accessibility, say, I think it's general accessibility.
Okay. And then you swipe it down and it talks.
Yeah, it talks. And it says everything that's on the screen. And and by the way, the voices are getting really good on textbooks as well. So you can download books from Amazon in Kindle format.
And it will read it out.
So traditionally, I used to buy only audio books, because I'm lazy. I like to listen to books. But actually, the text-to-speech is now so good that sometimes I don't bother buying the typically more expensive audio book. I go for the Kindle book, which is text only, and let the text-to-speech read it. And it's not bad. It's not as good as a human voice yet.
No.
But you can see...
Not quite Tom Hanks.
But in a year or two, and then as that voice improves, your old Kindle books will spring to life again because they'll have an even better voice.
Yes, of course.
And by the way, you can get... not available here yet, but Amazon Echo units, you'll soon be able to pay about £1 or something and get Samuel L. Jackson's voice on your Amazon Echo.
All right. Okay.
But I think he swears a bit, so be careful.
Okay, we don't want that. just before we go back to the calls, let's mention one other gadget here, which is not rushing out to buy new stuff. It's a way of sprucing up your old stuff.
Yeah, so, I deal with a lot of new laptops and desktops and all the rest of it, but you can rejuvenate your aging PC. And if your PC, your laptop, your desktop computer, even your Apple Mac, if it's over a year or two old, it's probably got a conventional hard disk drive in it, which is really killing your machine. And the alternative to that has been around for a long time, but it's been expensive. It's called an SSD or a solid state drive. And you can get one of these, and either you or someone, competent can open up your PC and put one of these in it, and your machine will spring to life. So it's a weird way of giving it a real midlife crisis. And these things, you can get £40 upwards for a reasonable capacity, £100 for more capacity than most of us will ever need. But one of the problems with this is choosing the right one, both with the solid state devices and also RAM, if you want to upgrade the internal memory. Again, that's a good way of giving a machine a good life kick. There are many brands of this, but one that I quite like is Crucial. And the reason for that is their stuff is good because they're the retail arm of a company called Micron who make the stuff. So they're actually buying it essentially from the manufacturer. And also on their website, uk.crucial.com, they have ways of that you can either allow it to scan your machine and tell you exactly what's compatible, or you put in the make and model and it gives you a guarantee. And that's really important because, to be honest, it's very easy to buy the wrong stuff for your computer, the wrong RAM or the wrong SSD. When you buy it using their scanner or their compatibility tool, they guarantee compatibility. So I think that's money well spent. And you can spend like £50, £100, and your laptop's good for another 2, 3, 4 years.
Okay, let's squeeze in some more calls. Rohan in Staines. Hello, Rohan.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi, what's your question? Yeah.
I have a Google Home Hub, and I'm just getting some work on my house done. So I was wondering, what are the must-have smart devices that I can connect to my Google Home? One of it, I was thinking, Google, switch off my light, and just switches it off. What are the other ones you would recommend?
Yeah, so in terms of lighting, the de facto standard for that is the Philips Hue range. That's HUE from Philips. Their standard is the best, and it works well with Google Home Hub. Also, if you look at the range of Nest cameras and the Nest doorbell, that works well with Google. At the moment, all this, you know, all the different rivals are incompatible. So Amazon stuff doesn't work well with Google stuff because they're all competing for the same market. Although, interestingly enough, last week, the major competitors announced that they were going to work together on a common standard. But that's at least a year or two away. But I would say I would look at, if you're looking at lighting, look at Philips Hue. If you're looking at cameras, the Google, the Nest stuff, because Nest belongs to Google. Yeah, so its compatibility is perfect. But the thing, just be aware, is check out the, because the cameras themselves are not cheap, but the subscription costs also are not trivial. Although, if you have more than one camera...
Yeah, that was my follow-up question, actually.
Yeah.
Because one of my colleagues actually said that... He did install a Nest Hub, and then they charge a lot for subscription as such.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's any way to escape subscription, any other alternative to Nest?
There are sort of, you can, okay, so if you've got, okay, so the Arlo stuff, you can, I think they come with, a year's free subscription. Don't quote me, but I think it comes with a year's free, and they're quite affordable as well. So that's something to look at. The other thing that you can do is you can look at cameras that don't use the cloud to store, but store locally on a card. So that Arlo Go, for example, can store on a card. The problem with that is if you're using them for security, and you have, God forbid, you have a break-in, and they steal your camera with
the memory
card.
They could steal the camera with them on it.
Happened to a local cafe my area. They stole it. They stole the recording equipment, and everything went. So, good point. Having both it can be an advantage, actually. Some devices allow both, but the Nest stuff will only do cloud based. But there are others that will do both.
And these light bulbs, what's the point of that then? You can tell your speaker to switch on the light.
Yeah. So for example. I'll tell you how I use them. I use my Amazon Echo. It's got something called a Zigbee hub in it, so I don't need a separate hub. I can set the lights, I can dim the lights, I can change their colour by voice.
Right. Couldn't you just use a switch?
Well, once you're in bed, you know. I mean, you think that's lazy. I can't be bothered to speak to it now, so I have one of these sensors. This is a Withings sleep mat under my mattress.
I was wondering what that is.
Well, it's literally come from under my mattress.
It's a mat with a USB plug on the end of it.
Yeah, so it goes under your mattress. It's from a company called Withings, who are great for this sort of thing. It's a sleep sensor, so it's much better than wearing a wristwatch at night, and it senses your sleep. And it even detects things like breathing disturbances, so you might have sleep apnea and never know it. It will tell you.
Wow!
Or if you're sleeping long but not good hours,
that's
good quality, it will tell you. But the other thing is, it combines with something called if this then that, and what that means is that when I get into bed, it dims my lights.
Crikey. Wow!
Which is probably more than you needed to know. But there
all right, Rohan, great question. Michelle in Brexhall. Hello, Michelle.
Oh, hello. No, Broxbourne, but don't worry about that.
Yes.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
And to you.
Yeah. You too, Michelle.
Yeah, okay. Right, I'm ringing up because I bought a Samsung television December, 2017.
Yeah.
And last February, I couldn't get a BBC iPlayer, okay? So I looked into that, did all what they told me to do, because I bought it from John Lewis, went through John Lewis thing, went to Samsung, did all this hub bin. Mm-hmm. Business they expected me to do, because although I don't seem very techy, I'm not stupid, you get me, and I can read and work things out anyway, so I did all that, and then I couldn't get the thing back, BBC iPlayer back, and I lost the will to live over that and never bothered. Anyway, last week I thought, oh no, I mean, this is a joke, so I rang up the Samsung up and they tried to help me. And I did all the things that I'd done before and all the rest of it. And then they were supposed to ring me back because it still wasn't working. And they didn't. Anyway, so now I've lost the complete will to live. And I'm thinking about buying a new telly completely because I can afford to do that.
Yeah.
But I only like 32 inches. I don't like big tellys.
Right. But you want one with all the apps on the iPlayer and so on, do you?
Michelle.
Yeah, but also, not being funny, I've got tellies going back to 1967 that were analogue, mind
okay.
you.
OK, well, we're running out of time. What's your advice,
So I'll do
Fevzi?
Quickly. Michelle, you don't need to buy a new television. What's happened is that the software in the Samsung has not been updated to keep up with the changes in the iPlayer app. And this is a problem because Samsung are used to selling televisions that, you know, you sell them and forget them. The best solution to this is to buy an external streaming box, something like an Amazon Fire TV. You can get them for... They're on offer all the time. Well, even 20 when they're on offer. It depends if you want the 4K one or not.
Yep.
So £20 to £40, plug it into the HDMI socket, and then you're good. And because that's a streaming device and that's what it does and that's what it was sold at, that will be kept up to date far better than any TV. So by all means, if you want a new TV, buy one, but your existing one's 2 years old.
So buy something like a Fire Stick and stick it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's how, you don't need to buy a new TV, Michelle. That's good news. Let's squeeze in Lisa, if we can, in Rotherham. Hello, Lisa.
Oh, hi. Happy Christmas
and
to you.
You too.
What's your question?
Right, one is I'm quite crafty. You have a video camera.
Yes.
And you can shoot maybe what I'm doing with a video camera. And you can maybe even play back what I'm doing so that if I don't like it, I can just shoot it again with a video camera. What it is, I'm wanting something that frees my hands, so I'm wanting video glasses. And I was wondering if you could recommend some...
When you say video. You're crafty, you mean you do crafts?
And,
yes, and you want to film yourself and your hands, so you want something like video glasses.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm wanting like a point of view video glasses,
or a camera that goes on your head or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, either my head or my body.
It's a great question, although Fevzi looks a bit flummoxed.
Well,
what do you think?
I would just say to you, so I know what you're talking about, Lisa. It's an interesting question. I would say to you, the problem with this, I mean, one or two of those do exist, but it's quite interesting that they tend to come and go in terms of availability. Apple are working on a set at the moment, but that's at least a couple of years away. The problem is the image stabilization. You move your head around a lot, and it will be very hard viewing for anyone who tries to view anything that you're doing on that. You'd need some really quite sophisticated image stabilization, and that would be difficult. A better solution, yes, you can, you know, strap a camera to your head or your glasses, but a better solution is to just have a fixed point over the shoulder camera and have proper lighting as well, and you'll get a far more stable and
with
viewable
a tripod
image.
Or something.
Yeah, if you look online, look at how video podcasters and vloggers do it. They will tend to use fixed cameras, and what you would buy for that is you buy something like a Samsung. It depends how much you want to pay, really, but something like a Sony S6000, something like that. A6000, that will do it. You put that on a tripod, and that will give you really good quality and a lot more flexibility.
Somebody's saying GoPro.
Yeah, so GoPros are action cams, so they're really designed for people who are doing things like surfing and rugged stuff.
Not Lisa's crafts necessarily.
No, because Lisa has the advantage of being in a static environment. She doesn't need to introduce that movement element,
right?
You know, unless she's going to shoot a sort of horror.
Just in the last moment we've got here, several people have been texting and saying, can you repeat the names of the items that you mentioned so quickly?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe we'll tweet them out as well, actually.
Yeah, we can do that. So the jump starter is called the ROAV Jump Starter Pro, ROAV. The camera that doesn't require any cables at all is called the Arlo Go, ARLO. Arlo Go. The RAM and the SSDs I recommend is Crucial, which is uk.crucial.com.
Okay, great. And we will we'll tweet out those details as well a little later if you missed them and you wanted to know. Fevzi, great to see you. Thank you very much indeed. And thanks for all your calls on that. Fevzi Turkup from GadgetDetective.com.